when I was a keynote speaker in the beginning, I never shared my story because I thought, who wants to hear that stupid story? Never shared my story the first 3 years I spoke. And I had a friend that was a coach, a speaking coach, and he goes, Rhonda, you really got to tell share your story. And I literally looked at her and said, nobody wants to hear that stupid, sad story. Nobody wants to hear that. She goes, trust me, they do. I go, no, they don't. And she goes, I dare you. And I'm like, you dare me? Okay. So I had two back-to-back events, both with women, and I wore the same outfit, and I gave the same talk, exact talk, same outfit, same everything. The only difference is I told my story. Now, the first time I told my story, it was like this.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. New episode, new review to highlight, and this is a review from Mario87 Medford. And he left a 5-star review saying, you owe it to yourself to check out Dominic's show. Loved episode 243 about the power of audiobooks. Really inspiring stories and insights from awesome guests. And he finished it off with a double arm flex emoji. You love to see it. And my man dug deep into the catalog. You love to see it. Well, there you go, my friends. So thank you, Mario87 Medford, for leaving that review about what you like about the show. And if you, too, like something about the show, let us know by heading over to the website, goingnorthpodcast.com, and letting us know what you like about the show so that way we can keep on doing it. Let's keep on keeping on advancing north to our greatness by getting on to today's guest. And today on the Highlight Reel, Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth, going strong today, like 8-pack abs and going, known as podmatch.com, the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts, and they're cool to freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than freaking, I guess, another 100 cucumbers. It's like, dude, another guest cooler than 100 cucumbers? They're like, that's like the highest and the coolest multiplier, bro. You only said that about one other guest. So I'm like, well, considering today's guest, I kind of had to have her break the freaking scale, because today's wonderful guest, y'all, international best-selling bookcaster, y'all, has not only she written multiple best-selling books 4 times over, indeed, with over 150,000 plus copies and counting. She's also a wonderful podcast host and an Emmy Award winner, standing ovation keynote speaker, master life coach, probably your coach's favorite coach, fear expert, America's favorite life coach. You heard that right, folks. America freaking loves her for a freaking reason, if not multiple reasons. And on top of that, she is the founder, y'all. She found something. The wonderful founder of Fearless Living Institutes. Let's give it up for the radiant and brilliant Rhonda Britton. How you doing today, Rhonda?
Thank you. I am doing fantastic. I mean, come on, with an opening like that, how can I not feel fantastic and amazing? Thank you. What a warm welcome.
Oh, yeah, definitely indeed. I like saw your Podmatch profile when you reached out. I'm like, oh, she's a freaking rock star. That did my homework, and I'm like, shoot, she's a rock star with resilience.
And the rock stars.
There you go. Boulders and pebbles, yeah. All the rocks. Even
that's
maybe
right,
Dwayne.
That's right. That's what you talk. You're talking straight now. There you go.
Hashtag rockstar Rhonda.
There you go. I like it.
That's right indeed. Well, since you've been on a boatload of interviews, I guess you give you the expert level starter question. So if you were to describe your journey from mini Rhonda to today's Rhonda in three words, what would they be and why?
Three words? Come on. Heartbreak, crawling, light.
Ooh.
Heartbreak because I was broken at the age of 14. I could tell you that story if you want. Very broken. And crawling is crawling through glass all the different times that I had to get past my past, you know, whether it was what happened at 14 or whether it was my dark night of the soul, like 14 years ago. So I have had a few of those. And so I've had to crawl through glass, it felt like. And then light is that is what I'm always aiming to shine, to receive, to give, is the light, so that we can light ourselves up in happiness and joy and live the life our soul intended. So there you go. Those are my three. Have any other questions?
Hey, I love those choices because it perfectly describes everything you've been through, because you've been through a lot and finally saw the light at the end of the tunnel, and it wasn't a train.
Yeah. And it was, thank God, that was light at the end of the tunnel, because for, I would say, almost 20 years, I didn't know there was a light at the end of the tunnel. I didn't know that at all. So what we're referring to is the worst day of my life. And, you know, if everybody who's listening or watching thinks about the worst day of their life, I believe that the worst day of our life has the seeds of our destiny gone. That, you know, at the worst days, there's something there that gets planted, that as we move through our journey and we follow that intuition, we follow that source, we follow that universal light, we will discover what that horrible thing was for. And my horrible thing was when I was 14 years old. I grew up in a little tiny town in Upper Michigan, 365 inches of snow a year. Two little restaurants, Douglas House Buffet and Big Boy. That's it. We didn't have any fast food. McDonald's was an hour and a half away. So nothing like that. When you went to the big city, you got to go to McDonald's. We talked about, you know, you talked about it for a week, right? Because it was like, I went to McDonald's, right? And so here we are, right? It was like a big deal. So I was 14. It was Father's Day. My parents were recently separated and my father was coming over for Sunday brunch, taking us out to Sunday brunch. And so my mom was in her bedroom fluffing up a beehive hairdo, and she's got her blue eyeshadow on and her rose colored lipstick. I have two sisters and they're fighting it out in our one bathroom. And I'm in my mom's room and my dad comes in the back door. Come on, come on. Cause that's what dads do. And me and my mom start walking towards the back door. My sister's still in the bathroom fighting it out. And as me and my mom and my dad start walking out to the car to get in the car to go to brunch, it starts sprinkling. And so my dad says he has to get his coat from the car. Now, this coat is a tan Naugahyde leisure suit coat. Now, if you remember the day, and if you're too young, look it up, because it was hot. It was really, really hot. So my dad opens his trunk to get his hot looking coat. And out of the corner of my eye, I see he is not grabbing a coat, but he is grabbing a gun. And he starts yelling at my mother, you made me do this. This is your fault. You made me do this. And he fires. And I start screaming, what are you doing, Dad? Stop. What are you doing, Dad? Stop. And he cocks the gun again. He points it at me. And I believe 100% I'm next. And he blinks and I blink and he blinks and I blink. And my mother, who already has one bullet in her, with her last breath, literally sees that he's got a gun in my face and screams out, no, don't. And my father, realizing my mother is still alive, takes that bullet intended for me and shoots my mother a second time. And that second bullet goes through my mother's abdomen, out her back. And for the next 20 minutes, all I heard was, and then my father cocks the gun one more time, puts it to his temple and fires. So in a matter of 2 minutes, I was the sole witness of watching my father murder my mother and commit suicide in front of me. Now, I don't know how you'd respond, but this is how I responded. I blamed myself because I was the only one out there. I was the only one that could have physically stopped it. And I didn't kick my father's shins. I didn't grab the gun. I didn't even jump in front of my mother. So when you don't save your mother, Dom, you don't get to be happy the rest of your life. That's off the table, right? And so in that moment, I basically split into two people. The outside Rhonda, who's fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. Fine, fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. And the inside Rhonda, who blamed herself, carried tons of shame, guilt, low self-confidence, low self-esteem, and didn't deserve to be alive. So for the next decade plus, I found alcohol and started drinking and numbing myself out, became an alcoholic, got three DUIs, and proceeded to try to kill myself three times. And it was that third suicide attempt, Dom, that I realized something, that I'm not very good at killing myself, not good at it. And
hooray.
Yeah, not good at it, right? And realizing that if I'm not dying, because that's what I want to do, then, well, I have to start to live. Now, mind you, those years that I was drinking and DUIing and trying to kill myself, I was also a huge learner. I've always been a personal development junkie. I read my first self-help book when I was 12. I was planning to be a minister when I was 13. So during all of those years, again, the inside Rhonda was searching for an answer. I was going to therapy, workshops, reading books. I was doing everything, inner child work, shaman work, you name it, energy work. But the inside Rhonda just kept on not believing she had a right to do those things, right? So when I woke up from that third suicide attempt, by the way, when you try to kill yourself three times, they do put you in a psychiatric ward for evaluation. After a few days, they deemed me not crazy. And I went back to my house and thought to myself, well, I've got to figure this out. I've got to start over because if I'm not dying, I got to figure out how to live, right? So I thought to myself, what do kindergartners do? What do they do? Because again, I'd learned all those things. That was nice knowledge and it was good tools, but it didn't take away the feeling that there was something wrong with me. And so I thought to myself, kindergartners, what do? They get a calendar with gold stars. So I went down to the store, got a calendar with gold stars. And every day for the next 30 days, I put a star on that calendar for anything, anything that I did that was good, anything, anything at all. And I'm talking, got angry and didn't break something. That's where I was. It's like, well, I didn't break something. I'm amazing, right? And so, I mean, right. I was like really proud of myself, right? And at the end of 30 days, I had a calendar filled with gold stars. And that moment gave me hope. It gave me hope that maybe I was worth saving. It was like a sign from God that it's like, yeah, I kept you alive for a reason. Now it would take me a few more years to figure out why I was left alive. But that was the beginning of me realizing, okay, I could make change. And man, I kept up those gold stars and I kept up that calendar for many years. And by the way, I still have that first calendar.
Ooh.
I do. I do.
Is it framed?
Yeah, it is. It's framed. It is framed. But you're going to love the story. So when I moved into this house that I'm in now, I was like, I know I have that calendar. I know I have that calendar because I don't throw away anything that's really meaningful to me. Now, mind you, everything's in boxes, right? They're in boxes. And I open the garage door. And woo-woo city, here's a woo-woo. I walk into the garage. I am not joking you. The calendar is sitting on the garage floor.
Wow.
And I am like, aw, how did the calendar jump out of a box? You know, because I was, right, because I knew it was in a box and I was coming in to get the boxes down to look through them. And it wasn't there yesterday. And there it was, literally right there. And so you bet your butt I framed that sucker. And I've got it in my office. And whenever I'm having a bad day, right, you got to remind yourself. And I look at that stars and I go, yeah, I did that. I did that. And look at, here's where I am today. And the hindsight, you know, looking at my father, you know, thinking about my father murdering my mother and how that ties in with my destiny is, of course, people killed because of fear, right? My father was humiliated. He was embarrassed. My mother was leaving him. He was ashamed. He blamed her. I mean, when he pulled the gun out, he just kept saying, it's your fault, right? Even though he's the one that bought the gun, loaded the bullets, pointed it, right? But it's not his fault. It's her fault. So, you know, that victim mentality is always driven by fear. So when I look at it today, my father killed my mother out of fear. My mother stayed too long. She was already in danger already. She didn't leave. She stayed out of fear. And I stayed in the muck and mire of my journey for a long time because I didn't think I had a right to leave, right? I didn't think I had a right to leave that muck and mire because I thought I owed my mother, right? Because I don't have a right to live the life my soul intended. I have to pay the price of not saving her. So thank the Lord, I was able to move through that, crawling through glass some of it, heartbroken a lot of it, but I did eventually feel the light.
Feel of the light, indeed. That's right. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Out of the cold darkness into the marvelous light where there's some warmth. You'll love to see it, indeed. You'll love to see it, indeed. So, my goodness, I'm sure you've shared that story thousands of times before, and I'm sure it's evolved in the way you've told it. But, like, my goodness, how do you keep it fresh over all of these years? Because you're an expert at what you do. So is there something that you do? Because aspiring speakers are like, man, like, she's a freaking expert. She's telling the same story and not sick of it yet, especially a painful one like that one.
No, it's just an honor to tell it because it really is the beginning of my journey. And, you know, that lives inside of me. That story is so critical to who I am today, right? Watching my mother be murdered is, I mean, it took almost 20 years of my life. And now I get to live this life. And moving from that life, from, you know, my mother and father and the burden I carried for 20 years, you know, and to release that burden and to eventually do what I do today, I don't know of a more of a miracle. So it is an honor for me to testify, so to speak, and really honor the journey I've been through, honor my parents by telling their story, and know that they had a part in all this. Because I believe, for again, this is woo-woo stuff, another woo-woo story. I like to think about me and my mom and dad up in heaven. We're angels, right? We're sitting around, angel in it. And we're like, what do you want to do next lifetime? I don't know. What do you want to do next lifetime, right? And we're not mom, dad, and daughter, right? We're just like three angels hanging out. And my dad goes, hey, I know. And we're like, what? What? And he goes, hey, why don't you help people master fear? And I'm like, me? Help people master fear? Me? Really? He goes, yeah, I think that's what you should do. I'm like, okay. And he goes, oh, something bad's going to have to happen to you. And me and my mom are like, yeah, something really bad, right? And my dad says, I'll be the bad guy this lifetime. And we're like, okay, thanks. Look, you're going to be the bad guy? He goes, yeah, I'll be the bad guy. He goes, how about this? I'll be the dad, you be the mom, and I'll kill you and then kill myself and you'll see it all. And we're in heaven going like this. Yeah. Idea. And it just took me 20 years to remember the story, right? It took me 20 years to remember my place in the story. It took me 20 years to let all the shame go and to release the guilt and release the pain and forgive so that I could be here today. So I just think of me and my mom and dad in heaven, just chucking it, you know, laughing it up and trying to help the world be better and all of us sacrificing in our own ways.
There you go, in your own ways of deed, in your own ways of deed. That's right indeed. So my goodness.
And I am a standing ovation keynote speaker, so I am really also good at storytelling.
Yeah, that helps a lot. That's right, turning a saltine cracker into a s'more. You love to see it.
S'more, you're speaking my language because I love s'mores.
Ooh.
Yeah. There, when it's in the fall, sometimes, have you ever made a s'more in the oven?
Oh, never in the oven.
Because usually I wait until there's a bonfire and then you do it the real way, the way you should, right? But sometimes I pull out the oven and put that graham cracker, put that marshmallow, a little chocolate, put it under the broiler for a minute, and it comes out pretty gosh darn perfect.
Oh, okay. New idea. There you go, folks.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. If you don't want to go full nature, she's got you covered. Rhonda's giving you a new idea.
I got you covered. Oh, don't put the chocolate on until you melt the marshmallow. Then put it on after.
There you go. That way you can get it right. So that way it'll get hate mail. Be like, hey, the s'mores didn't work.
Yeah, because don't put the chocolate on under the broiler. Don't put the chocolate on under the broiler. Just put the graham cracker with the marshmallow and just leave it there a little while. You have to keep track because it gets pretty, depending on your oven, it gets pretty hot. And then right when you take it out, you put that chocolate on, right? Or you can put the chocolate under the marshmallow. You can do that too.
Oh, well, there we go. There we go. That's right indeed. It's either over or under. I guess in some ways, in this case, sunny side up.
Dom.
So my goodness. So being able to get through all of that and even start your wonderful acting career and doing my usual homework and finding out your freaking hot, sexy daughter back in that, was season 5 of Married with Children?
Oh, you know about that. Yes, that's right. Did you watch that episode with me in my tight black dress? Oh, yeah. Yes. I was cute, was I not? I was cute. Yeah, so I moved to Los Angeles to be an actress. And I got a lot of guest stars. I did a lot of pilots as comedy pilots. And I think I did 5 comedy pilots. And I was like, come on, right? When am I going to hit it, right? And as I worked more, Dom, you're not going to believe this, but I didn't like acting anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I quit acting eventually because I realized I was tired of playing other people and I wanted to be myself. And I remember when I realized that, I was shocked because all I ever wanted to be since I was a little girl was an actress. And so here I was being an actress, getting hired, making money, Having SAG insurance, hello. We know how great that is. That was a big deal when I got that SAG insurance, when I had a national commercial, et cetera. And so here I was working and I'm not interested anymore. And I realized what acting was for me was actually understanding my emotional life. Because actors, you have to become really, really aware of every moment, right? You have to be with your partner. You have to be aware, very, very aware. And you have to be in touch with your emotions. So acting in some weird way healed me to a, you know, to a certain degree, because I had to learn to be in a scene. I had to be angry. Well, I wasn't allowed to be angry growing up, right? I had to speak up and be my voice. I remember when I played Queen Elizabeth in a something and I used my voice. I remember that play changed me, because how could I be Queen Elizabeth, right? And then I'm like, oh, you know, off with her head, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I did that. And so being an actress, taking acting classes and doing improv, and I did stand up, those things, unbeknownst to me, again, God knows what he's doing. I learned all those skills that turned my back to acting, turned my back to stand up and improv. But then when they were looking, you know, 10 some years later, when they were looking to put a life coach on television, right? So here all those years, Dom, I was like, please give me a series. Please give me a series. Please give me a series. Never got my series. And now there's no such thing as reality television. I'm in London. At this time, there's no such thing as reality television. I'm in London on my first book tour in the United Kingdom. And my publicist is like, Rhonda, there's a production company that wants to do the first reality show, the life coach, or therapist. And they're looking everywhere. And they've looked for 9 months. And you'll be telling. They wonder if you would be audition. We do really into audition. And I'm like, oh, yes. Oh, yes, I will. Oh, yes, I will. So the next day I did a screen test. I put a 25-year-old girl in front of me about dating. And again, I'm not afraid of the camera, right? I've been on the camera my whole life. So I coached like you, nobody's business. And 3 weeks later, I was living in London. 3 weeks later. And the irony of it all, which I'm sure you've already picked up, is all those years I prayed for a series, right? I quit acting. I get a series playing myself. Television. And I ended up doing 3 series and over 600 episodes of television. So it's like, how crazy is that, right? How crazy is that, that I quit acting, never thought I'd be on the screen again. And then I end up being on 600 episodes of reality television, changing lives.
Yeah. No.
That's crazy. That's crazy talk, Dom. That's crazy. That's like your calendar with the stars. That's crazy.
Yeah, the good crazy talk, indeed. That's what I freaking called, indeed, because you kind of manifest in the way. It's like, yeah, you wanted to grow up to be an actor minister, actress minister. And it's like, well, in a way, it's not, you know, like full church pulpit swag, but hey, standing ovation, keynote speaking, reality TV, freaking 600 episodes, no less. Like, folks are lucky to get all 6 episodes, let alone one. Then you get freaking 600, like triple digits. That's freaking legendary numbers.
I've been more than Jennifer Aniston, okay? More episodes on TV than Jennifer Aniston. So just saying.
See, there you go. There you go. Got her beat. That's right. That's right. No Jenny's from the acting block here.
Nope. I got it going on. Nope. But I always laugh about it, because it's like, how did God know that? God, that's amazing, right? So, you know, I look back on my life when I said crawl through glass, right? It's like I crawled through glass many a year, many a decade. And I think that's true for all of us, right? We go through our own dark seasons, right? We go through our own dark nights, and we go through our own glass crawling. And if we just keep going, as well as learn the lesson we're meant to learn while we're crawling through that glass, we will feel the light on our face, and we will feel the light, more importantly, in our hearts, and we'll be able to shine that light within ourselves and without. So other people can feel their light on their faces when they're around you, which is so wonderful. Do you feel the light, Dom? Do you feel my light? Come on now, tell me. Do you feel my light? Come on, Dom.
Of course
Tell
I do.
Me.
Hashtag okay. Right here, Rhonda. You love to see it, indeed. You love to see it, indeed. And heck, with all that wonderful culmination, that globe of basically life, you got all these wonderful books under your belt. So what was it like putting the first one out there, Fearless Living? Because I heard you actually wanted to get the permission of your sisters first before putting it out there. So how was
you
it
You did
like?
Your homework. You did your homework, Dom. Wow. Yeah, so I got my book deal, right? And I wrote the book. And then we were together for my sister's birthday. and they hadn't read any of it or done, you know, anything. So I gave them the chapter, the preface of my book is the chapter about my parents' death. And so I handed it to them and said, I want you to read it and tell me if there's anything you want changed in here. Is there anything you don't agree with, anything that you have a problem with? And to their credit, I'm so proud of them, is they went and read it. We came back, came back. And they said, Rhonda, you know, this is your book. This is your experience. We were all in different places. You know, both my sisters were in the bathroom. When the first shot was fired, my older sister ran to the bedroom to try to look up the window. You know, those high windows up, right? She crawled on the bed to look out, right? My other sister went and sat on the couch, right? So we all did our own thing in response to those bullets firing. And they were so kind. They were like, this is your story. And it was so wonderful. But okay, so they say yes, then it's my publisher. It's now like a month before the pub date, and you get your copy in the mail, right, from your publisher. And so my assistant is coming in with a package, and she's like, I think it's your book. And I said, well, you open it, because I don't want to open it. She goes, oh, no, I'm not opening your book. You have to open it. I'm like, no, I don't want to open my book. You open it. She goes, I'm not opening your book, and she hands it to me. And so I rip open the top, right, open it, pull out a copy of my book, and immediately, like literally like it was hot fire coals, threw it on the floor and said, what have I done? Now, I got a big giant advance for a first-time author, so they were doing a 20,000 first run, which is a big deal.
Nice.
And all I thought about was, how can I get those 20,000 copies back? I gotta come up with the money to buy all 20,000 copies. Because people are going to know everything about me. Oh my God, what have I done? Done. They're going to hear about the stories of my drunk alcoholism. They're going to hear about my parents. They're going to hear about, oh my God, what have I done? And I really was just like, right? And that lasted for a little while. And then once, you know, started coming out and went to book signings and met people. And, you know, it was just such an honor because so many people just said it was exactly what they needed. And, you know, when I was a keynote speaker in the beginning, I never shared my story because I thought, who wants to hear that stupid story? Never shared my story the first 3 years I spoke. And I had a friend that was a coach, a speaking coach, and he goes, Rhonda, you really got to tell share your story. And I literally looked at her and said, nobody wants to hear that stupid, sad story. Nobody wants to hear that. She goes, trust me, they do. I go, no, they don't. And she goes, I dare you. And I'm like, you dare me? Okay. So I had two back-to-back events, both with women, and I wore the same outfit. And I gave the same talk, exact talk, same outfit, same everything. The only difference is I told my story. Now, the first time I told my story, it was like this. My father killed my mother and killed himself, and that's why I'm here today. And there you go. Yeah, that's pretty much how I did, right? It was so bad because it was so scary, right? It was just petrifying, right? And I thought everyone's going to run out, you know, with their hair on fire. Like, oh, my God, it's a crazy person, right? So I literally just blurted it out. And so the first time when I didn't tell the story, after I talked, you know, people came up and they stood in line to talk to me. There's like maybe 3 to 5 people, right? And then the next time when I went blurted it out really poorly, afterwards, I had a line that went around the building. It went around the building and people were in line to talk to me, crying and so touched. And I could not believe. I couldn't believe it. I really just could not believe it that telling my story would have such an impact. Because you have to remember, for 20 years, I was embarrassed and ashamed of it. I was afraid. My mother always told me I was like my father. I was afraid of my anger. I was afraid that I might be like him. I mean, what does that make me, right? Like I was just, I hid it from people. I never told anybody how my parents died, for God, like almost 20 years. Like, I would always be like, oh, yeah, they're gone. And they'd be like, accident? And you know what I'd say? Yes, it was an accident. And in my mind, because I can't lie, I go, my father accidentally bought a gun and then he accidentally put bullets in it and he accidentally put it on my mother. You know, like I would have to, right? Because I couldn't, I thought it was so shameful and so humiliating. And so I'm one from one of those families, right? Because after it happened, people weren't allowed to hang out with me. My family never came, like my relatives, my aunts, uncles, nobody came over ever. And so I was filled with, you know, you're from one of those families now. So the thought of sharing that story and revealing I'm from one of those families, it was like, oh my God, I'd rather die. But that proved to me, that gave me the courage to start telling it. It took me a few years to tell it in a way that was at all good. But I started telling it then, like I said, really poorly at first, but I started, embracing it more and started to let it run through my veins and accept it and love it and really be proud of what I've accomplished and what my parents and I did together.
Together indeed, together indeed. You'll love to see it indeed. Because, yeah, it's like those stories. Heck, even probably a couple episodes at the time of this recording, past episode with Joy Giovanni mentioned how sometimes the stories that we don't want to share and want to keep hidden are the stories we definitely are the ones we need to share. Because, hey, you had that wonderful line wrapping around the freaking building as opposed to two or three people be like, oh, this is
That's right.
great. Yeah, we heard it
Yeah.
before. You're freaking awesome. As opposed to, oh my gosh, you went through a lot. Because I was taken aback when I first heard it. I'm like, God dang. Like, how the heck do you even respond to that? Like, it's like, no wonder she's a fear expert. Because it's like, dude, like you're seeing your parents in that situation and leaving this world like that. So.
I had to get a handle on my fear, and I had to admit I had fear, because back in the day, after my parents died, if you would have said, "Are you afraid?" I'd been like, "No, I'm not afraid." I mean, I grew up, like I said, in Upper Michigan. I grew up 100% Finnish. We don't feel. We have no feelings. We don't. Nobody asks if you're scared or how you're doing. So if you would have said to me during those 20 years of drinking and DUIs and suicide attempts, if I was scared, I would have looked at you like you're a crazy person. Why would I be scared? Like, why? I was in such denial, right? I was so cut off from my emotional life. I was so avoiding anything that had to do with fear or feeling weak, because I had to be strong to ignore it, right? To pretend it didn't happen. I'm above it. I am not my father's daughter. I am not the murderer's daughter, right? And just trying to get past all that, all the shame that I carried on my back for 20 years. So it's when I started understanding how fear works. Talk about a light bulb moment. Talk about like a what? Why don't they teach this? Wait, why doesn't anybody? Nobody taught. No, what? Nobody talks about this, because people don't really understand how fear works. And all of our fear responses, all of our fear symptoms, I call them, right? Procrastination, people pleasing, overwhelm, judgment, comparing, people, no boundaries. Let me I got a whole list here. Just a minute, I got to get my list out. Resentment. Wait, I got to get my list out. I got a big old list here. And when I read this out loud in crowds, they go cuckoo crazy, because they're like, no, I don't want to hear it. A fear response is isolating, pretending everything's okay, condemning, hiding, whining, settling, comparing, manipulating, getting defensive, judging, complaining, procrastinating, waiting, whining, blaming, struggling, worry, control, deflecting, feeling bitter, powerless, entitled, self-centered, dissatisfied, resentful, guilty, disappointed, being a perfectionist, getting indifferent, irresponsible, irritated, probably like now when you're hearing all these words, victimized, ignored, self-pity, and annoyed. I mean, these are, when you're experiencing these things, these are not character flaws. These are not things that you're doing because you're lazy or stupid. You're doing them because fear has been activated. And fear in our neurobiology, it's part of our neurobiology, wants to stop us. And it will use these things to get us confused, to get us becoming our own worst enemies, right? Self-sabotaging. And then we make them character flaws. Oh my God, if I only quit procrastinating, then I could get on with my life. Oh my God, if I just quit people pleasing, I could find love. If I just quit getting so judgmental, I'd feel so much better about myself, but I'm so embarrassed, right? So we take these and judge ourselves and take them on as character flaws, and we identify with them. Instead, all those lovely things that I just named and more, instead, if you said, that's what's wrong with me, instead said, oh, that's just a fear response. And oh, by the way, fear responses don't happen when you're sitting on the couch eating Doritos. Those only happen, right? When you're contemplating, maybe it's just an unconscious thought moving through you, or it might be a thought, or it might be an action. You're starting to contemplate what I call stretch, risk, or die. And so you're going to take a stretch, risk, or die, get out of your comfort zone. Fear goes, wait a minute, wait a minute. She's crazy. I can't keep her safe. Wait a minute. I got to shut her down. If she goes off and, writes a book, oh my God, what's going to happen? Oh my God, if she goes on TV, Oh my God, she's going to get rejected. People are going to laugh at her. Oh my God, I got to save her. I got to save her, fear says. And we believe fear because it knows us so well, because fear knows everything we know. It's as spiritual as we are, educated as we are, knowledgeable as we are, and it uses all of that against us. Just saying, Dom. I'm just saying.
Yes, indeed.
and that's why I created the Wheel of Fear and Wheel of Freedom, so you can identify your individualized and personalized Wheel of Fear and your individualized and personalized Wheel of Freedom, which is the way out.
She's wheeling and dealing. you love to see it, indeed. You love to see it, indeed. Like, you got a wonderful, beautiful array of freaking cuts. I freaking love the wheels. And I love how they're basically simple. It's not like them.
That's right.
Them 8, 10, 12 category wheels and some of those personal development
Jesus.
Books. It's like, I mean, they're good and all, but it's like, it's like, nah, some folks, it's like, the brain can handle so much. It's like, let's just keep it simple here. Like, it's a circle, y'all.
it's a circle with four spokes, right? It's a circle with four spokes. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. And once you see it and understand how it works, life gets really simple. Because just like Dom, you're saying, it's like all these quizzes and all these things that we do. It's like, well, you do this, you do that. You got to fix these things. I remember I took a quiz a few years ago and, you know, basically, I had all 10 things, of course. Well, how am I supposed to move beyond those 10 things, all 10 things, right? It's overwhelming. So as, you know, neuroscience says, we need a new mental model. We need to change our perceptions. That's the only way to change our life is our perception based on neuroscience. So this literally changes the filter in which you see the world. So you know, you learn how you see the world when you're seeing through the eyes of fear and your wheel of fear, and you see, you express and embrace what your world looks like when you're on the Wheel of Freedom. And you've experienced your Wheel of Freedom already, and you've experienced your Wheel of Fear. So once we label it and you see it for what it is, you're going to go, okay, all right. Life becomes a lot easier, a lot more graceful, a lot simple. And I love that you mentioned, it's a wheel, people. It's four spokes, right? Super easy. Simple, not easy.
yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's the major difference. It's like, simple to see, but not easy. It's like, the behind the scenes work. It's like, it's a whole machine.
Well, I just taught Wheels Weekend this weekend. And so I did people's wheels this weekend. And so people that I was doing their wheels, they're just like, you know, and what I mean by doing their wheels is I'm helping to identify their fear response, their trigger, their essential nature, et cetera, all the components on their Wheel of Fear and Wheel of Freedom. And one woman's like, you cracked the code on fear. I'm like, yeah, right? Another woman's like, I had no idea this was this deep. I had no idea what was going to happen. I had no idea what this weekend was about. Clearly, I thought I was just coming to a fearless living transformation program. And now I know exactly what holds me back. I know exactly how to move forward. And so got beautiful, beautiful comments. Of course, everybody's so excited they have their wheels. Because again, it gives you a new way to view your life.
So that's right. Rhonda's got the metaphorical tire shining for your life, y'all. That's right. That's right, dude. That's right.
God. You are hysterical. You are so good. You are a talker. You are good. You're good. And so entertaining. And so clever. So witty.
Yeah, right back at you. That's right, D. For a freaking reason. Shoot, like, there's so many things. Heck, even one of my favorite things and why you're really an expert at what you do, like checking out your podcast, which is a little bit of a blast from the past, the wonderful Master Coach Mindset podcast. Like, my goodness, so even though it's been a while since you uploaded an episode, it's still freaking great content. So what would you consider your top three lessons learned from starting, running, and growing your magical show?
Well, I'll say one thing first about Master Coach Mindset. The reason I make no more episodes is because that is my entire, it's a big part of my coaching philosophy. And those are evergreen, baby. And if you want to be a better coach, if you want to be a better therapist, if you want to be a better leader, go and listen to season one, where I give you the manifesto of Master Coach. What does it mean to be a Master Coach? It'll blow your mind because it's not normally what you think it is. And Don is nodding his head, which makes me so happy. And then the next series is all about breaking up the 8 coaching skills that I developed. And by the way, I'm the only coaching school in the world that has skills, teaching coaching skills. Everybody else teaches a framework or a process. These are actually skills that you're going to learn. And then I talk about, how do you be a life coach? How do you grow into a life coach? How do you become that next level of life coach? And then, of course, I interview some life coaches so you can hear how people use Wheel of Fear, Fearless Living, in different areas of the world and coach people. So yeah, I mean, it's evergreen. It is good to go. And yeah, I love that thing. It's beautiful. So what was the question again?
Yeah, your top 3 lessons from running it, starting it, and growing it.
My top 3 lessons. One is, as you know, I am a talker, and I really am a believer in, and this isn't true for everyone. Everyone doesn't work like me, but I work best without a script. So when I have an episode, I just create a title and I create like 3 bullet points.
Yeah.
And if there's a question I want to make sure I answer, like if somebody, because people send me questions all the time, so I had those questions because I would forget those. And I would just have a little, 3x5, 4x6 card with those things on it. And I would announce the episode. I would have the 3 bullet points, and then I would go, right? I would go. And I would let spirit use me and say what I got to say. And then at the end, of course, answer the questions that are burning in people's hearts regarding this topic. So I trust myself completely, as I can see you do too. So I trust myself completely. And I think trusting yourself as a coach is such a critical skill, because if you are in your head when you're coaching, you're not coaching the person, you're coaching yourself. Okay? Because you're talking to yourself in your head instead of listening to the client. So it's really critical that we as coaches, leaders, therapists, people, wellness practitioners, et cetera, supervisors, anybody, parents, that we really, really are willing to listen. And listening, of course, for many people is dangerous because it can trigger them because they don't know the answers, or they don't know what to say, or they don't know what to do next. And that is the point of trust. And it's one of the reasons, before we started, you started talking about my Fearless Living Writing Group. It's one of the reasons I have my Fearless Living Writing Group, because that's a prompt class, a writing prompt class. So when we do writing prompts, the whole point of that is learning to trust your voice and trust yourself. So when you're writing that prompt, I say, write whatever comes up. And people have been in that class now 1.5 years, 2 years, and their level of self-trust, their level of ability to express themselves is just skyrocketed.
Skyrocketed indeed. So out of curiosity, is a positive or positive mindset or positive thinking, is that one of the 8 magical skills, or is that just a bonus skill?
No, positive thinking. I always say, forget positive thinking. Not that I don't want you to be optimistic. Not that I don't want you to see through the lens of, powerful, positive, empowering. Of course I do. But for far too many people, when they use the lens of positive thinking, they actually cut off their emotional life. So they cut off their sadness and their grief. They cut off their hurt and their suffering and their pain. And people think those feelings are negative. They're not negative. They're just feelings. I remember so vividly talking to a client. She goes, I got so mad. Oh, I'm so sorry. I had a negative feeling. I go, being mad is not a negative feeling. Being mad is just being mad. It's what you do with that feeling that determines if you're on your wheel of fear or wheel of freedom. We all get mad. We all get hurt. We all suffer. We all have grief. We all feel frustrated. We all have doubt. But then what are you going to do? Are you going to filter it through the wheel of freedom and move forward and live in your essential nature? Or are you going to filter it through the wheel of fear, keeping yourself at the effect, the victimization, et cetera, of that behavior? Oh, I'm a bad person because I just judged somebody. Forget that second part. You judge somebody. Now let's move on, right? Let's move on. See yourself as innocent. So innocence is the number one skill. Our skill number one is being willing to see your clients and yourself as innocent. And that's Jesus stuff, Bo, Dom. That's the Jesus stuff. That's Jesus stuff, right? To be able to see your clients innocent. Because too many coaches, too many therapists are trying to get their coaches and their clients to wake up, right? They're trying to get them to wake up. Wake up, wake up, wake up. Well, that's lovely. Don't get me wrong. That's lovely. But right. When you see their innocence, they can unfold their soul at their own rate and not your rate. And I see coaches all the time and therapists say, I need new clients. My clients aren't the right fit for me. And you know, I need different there. I have to change my client list. They just don't get it. They don't work hard enough. And I always say, this is what I train my coaches on, because I certify coaches, is I go, if your client's not getting it and you feel like it's your client's problem, trust me, you need to learn how to coach. You need to become a better coach. Your client isn't the problem. You are. Sorry, I'm a little passionate about this. Dom, I'm a little passionate about coaching.
No, I freaking love it because like just getting a taste of some of your content, some of your past interviews, I'm like, yeah, this ain't your run-of-the-mill everyday I'm a coach, even if I went to like a weekend seminar or I didn't, I just decided to start a business or whatever. And it's like just hearing you speak and it's like taking notes, it's like, dude, like this isn't your ordinary coach. Like you literally became America's favorite life coach for a freaking reason, because you actually know your stuff, you apply it, and you help others to apply it too.
That's
So my goodness, so since you've been on so many interviews, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're on the guest side of the game?
God, that's such a good question. You know, I've never been asked that. So I guess that's a question that I've never been asked. So that's pretty amazing. Gosh, I can't even think of anything. That's such a good question. I'll have to put some thought to that. I think the thing that I would want everybody to know, so however the question is asked, is, you know, what's the one thing I want people to get into the cells of their beings? What is the one thing, if you could say one thing, Ron, and every person in the world would get it and get it in their cells and they'd always have it forever? Well, that's the question. And the answer is, there's nothing wrong with you, it's just fear. There's nothing wrong with you, it's just fear. There's nothing wrong with you, it's just fear. You're not stupid, you're not lazy, you're not selfish, you're not rejected, you're not a failure, you're not all those, you don't have lack of worth. Ooh, I want to erase that from the coaching vernacular, worthy issues. Like, you don't
Oh,
have a worth issue, right? It's like,
yep.
what? Okay, that's just fear, gang. And you just labeled it pretty. Like, I have low self-worth. I have clients come to me, I have a low self-worth. They go, no, you don't. No, you don't. No, that's just fear. You don't have low self-worth. You have low self-worth because you believe fear. But once we remove fear, you trust me, you will not have low self-worth. It is not your problem. So low self-esteem, low self-worth, low self-confidence, all those things are not the problem. Those are just the thing you see and how everybody conveniently labels them so then they can fix you or change you. It's like, no, don't buy into that. You've got worth, you've got value, you are exactly who you need to be. And the reason, the only reason that you're not living the life your soul intended is fear. That's it. That's it. Now, it may show up different for Don than me, than you, but it's the same thing. So once you understand how fear works, the world gets a lot clearer. Your brain gets a lot clearer, and you know exactly where you're going. Maybe not right away because you got to get that fog out, but you'll start seeing clearer than you ever saw before. And that's exciting.
Exciting indeed, exciting indeed. You love to freaking see, you love to freaking see it indeed. Reminds me of that good old verse in the Bible where it talks about how we're not given the spirit of fear, but the power of love and the
That's
sound
right.
mind.
That's right. That's right. I just love so many people, right? You just watch social media or you like, read articles and everybody talks about fear, don't they? Every public speaker talks about fear. Every keynote speaker, every trainer talks about fear. But do they ever tell you how to get over it besides taking five deep breaths, right? Everyone talks about it. Everyone says, oh, it's fear. It's fear. It's fear. It's fear. It's fear. It's fear. And that's what I heard, right? It's fear. It's fear. It's fear. And I'm like, not helpful. Not helpful. Do. And I'm a big how person because I read all those books while I was trying to get through my crawling through glass. And they would say, love yourself. And I'd be like, okay, well, that's nice for you to say. But if you don't know how to love yourself, how do you love yourself? Or just have more confidence. Well, okay, how do you get more confidence if you don't have confidence, right? So all of these handy cliches and handy isms, you know, and again, they're lovely and wonderful and inspiring. And yes, I read them and I say them and I love them too. Every single person is, has its value and worth, and they are not behind. Like I said, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just fear. So I decided that I better figure this thing out. And then God helped. God gave me the download. So thank you, God.
Amen, indeed. Definitely gave you the download. Hashtag Real Deal Rhonda. You'll love to see it.
Yeah, thank you.
That's right,
thank
indeed.
you.
Well, two more questions. I'll let you make a run for it.
Okay.
So the first, I'd love to ask every guest out of curiosity, just for laughs and giggles, since books are food for the mind, is that if your fabulous book will go with your, probably, I guess, your keystone book in a way, your wonderful book, Fearless Living, Live Without Excuses and Love Without Regret. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Oh, well, I'm going to say pizza because pizza is my favorite food. But really, that I said that, it's water. It's actually water because it's essential to your life. It's water. I'm just going to say that. Yeah, water. It's water. Got to drink it. Got to need it. Got to need it. Once you understand that, then you'll be thirst. Your thirst will be quenched.
Yeah, you're so right. But I know why pizza came in your mind first, because of the wheels of freedom and fear.
And pizza is my favorite food, right? Like when you go, what food do you want if you only have one food the rest of your life on the desert island? I always go, food, you know, pizza, pizza. And I want broccoli and spinach and hamburger. Okay, that's what I want on it. Don't laugh, but that's what I get.
Hey, that's all good. Hey, it's green.
So
it's good for you.
It's so good. That's right. I get a little green, right? That's right.
That's right. Indeed.
Okay, what's that next question? I'm ready. Come on.
Yes, indeed. I was joking about the pepperoni proactive behaviors. But anyways, but yeah. Yeah, that's right. They didn't see that one coming.
No, no, you are so good. You're so good. I love you. I love you, Dom.
Freaking love you too. You're freaking best of your craft for real. So,
oh, thank you.
Yes, baby. It's coming down to the question every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you are 25 again, but you're still in the current year with all of your experience, what advice would you give to yourself?
Well, first of all, I'd look awesome. So that would be amazing.
Hashtag more awesome. You already look awesome.
Because,
come on now.
Right. Because come on. Because when I was 25, I used to go to the gym all the time and I had like a waist, like, you know, I had a six pack. Right. So it's like, oh, that would be nice. I would like that. If I knew everything I knew, well, gosh, I would start helping right away. I would start helping right away, because when I was 25, I was doing my first or second suicide attempt and I was an alcoholic. So if I got to relive those years and take those years back, I would just do more of what I'm doing. And hopefully I would evolve more and even be more loving, because my quest, and I have not achieved it yet, but my quest is to be in people's, you know, when I'm with somebody, that they feel my love. And they feel loved of themselves, right? That they feel loved. And that is where I'm going. And that is what I want. I want people to know they are worth loving and they are lovable. And I love them and they are love themselves. So that's what I'd be telling myself at 25. And that's what I'd be preaching. And I'd be a size 6 or a 4. Okay. And really cute.
Hashtag extra cute. That's right, with all the big heart energy.
yeah, that's right. Because back then I was closed, right? I was closed. I was protecting myself. I was an alcoholic. I mean, I just, you know, I was closed. So to be 25 and be heart open, wow, that would be amazing. It's amazing to be me with my heart open now. So it's amazing anytime your heart is open.
Heck yes, right indeed, especially with the 30th anniversary coming up of the wonderful business too.
That's right. And it's my 38th. It's going to be my 38 years of sobriety coming up.
Woo-hoo!
So my 30 years of business coming up and my 38th year of sobriety. So whew, I know I am been coaching and sober longer than you've been alive, Dom. I know that. So I know there's a lot of people listening that are like, I wasn't even born yet. That's right. You weren't even born yet. So I've been doing a lot of work while you've been, you know, growing up. So I got it for you.
That's right, indeed. And you got it covered like a blanket. Maybe three during the winter. So, my goodness,
My
my.
God, you're so good.
Well, thank
You're
you
so good.
indeed. Well, hey, the good news is with this slice of wisdom that you shared, or the multiple slices, that it's probably even barely close to 1% of what you freaking know. So, for those who need to dive into the other 99% of what you freaking do, and I know you got a big program coming up too. For those who need to keep in contact with you and check that out like a library book, what's the best way for folks to do so, Rhonda?
Well, I want to give everyone who's listening right now one of my very favorite tools that my clients and students love. It is called How to Cure Procrastination with My Stretch, Risk, or Die course. And this is going to help you understand why you're stuck, what you get stuck about. But more importantly, it's going to show you how to move beyond that because I'm going to show you your comfort zone, your stretch zone, your risk zone, your die zone. You're going to start thinking of risks differently. And I'm going to show you what, like I said, keeps you stuck, but I'm also more importantly going to show you how to move beyond it. Now, it's three videos, 15 minutes each. You can do audios, you can do videos. It's got workbook. It's also got sheets, worksheets, templates. So if you want to work in an area of health, there's help there. There's a template. Relationships, there's a template. Open your business, got a template. So there's going to be a whole bunch of tools to support you to start building towards your dream. So a dream, a goal, whatever you got going on, go to fearlessliving.org/risk, RISK. Fearlessliving.org/risk. Now, this is the extra bonusy part. In the third video, I actually explain the wheel of fear. So you're going to see me draw it on the board and I'm going to talk you through it. So you're going to actually know about this wheel and these four spokes. So go on over to fearlessliving.org/risk, RISK. And get that free course. And then when you do, you're going to get on my list. And when I launch my new program coming up called the Coaching Code, that's going to crack the code of fear. I'm going to share all these things that I know about coaching and how to change people's lives. I'm going to give the inside scoop. I'm going to give all the secrets that I've literally never shared before. I am going to start sharing them. And I'm super excited. Because I want everybody to know what I know. I want everybody to know what I know. So you can add it to your repertoire. You can get that stuff sucked into your brain and start using everything that I know and apply it to your own life, apply it to your own business, apply it to your family and friends. And, you know, you're going to get a little bit more fearless or a whole lot more fearless. You never know. So fearlessliving.org/risk.
Woohoo! Fearlessliving.org/risk. You'll love to freaking see it. And it's risk-free.
That's right. It's risk-free. It's risk-free. It's free. Free, risk-free. That's right.
There you go. It's risk-free. You might feel frisky afterwards. You never know.
You never know. You're going to have a lot more courage.
There you go. That's right, indeed. And then it'll lead to, never mind. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, risk-free, y'all. I was going to open a rabbit hole. Let me not open that one.
Don't do it, Dom. Don't do it.
Yeah,
Don't. We might be just having a little too much fun now.
well, we're keeping fun on the bun here. That's right,
That's
indeed.
right. That's right. That's right.
Sarah, so that right, folks, are going to put a link to all of Rhonda's goods in the show notes. That way you can keep up with all that she's freaking doing. Because I told you, folks, she's definitely the real deal. It's like one of those wonderful freaking environments you need to be in, y'all. That's right, indeed. She's one of those wonderful chieftains, y'all. She's one of those wonderful chiefs of an area of excellence, y'all. One of those environments of excellence you definitely want to be in it, because she's still just getting started, because she's got a big, beautiful brain that's still got more to share, more stories to share,
That's
more
right.
folks to
That's
coach,
right.
y'all. So keep up with all that she's doing, indeed. Well, Betty, parting words before we close up shop, Rhonda?
I'm going to repeat it again and again and again. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just fear. There is nothing wrong with you. It's just fear. So I ask you now, are you willing to be wrong about everything to find the right life for you? Are you willing to be wrong about everything you think and everything you're doing and all the ways you've been supporting yourself and tricking yourself and avoiding yourself and denying yourself to find the right life for you? So there's nothing wrong with you. It's just fear. And be willing to be wrong because the life is waiting for you. That's yours. Live the life your soul intended. There you go.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual.
Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for free, and be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.